gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Hey, DC Super Friends. Welcome back to Issue 6 of the DC Superpowers Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Ken, and sitting along here with me in the basement of the Hall of Justice is my good friend, Vernon. Say hello, Vern.
Hello.
Now, guys...
How you doing, Super Friends?
Now, Super Friends, we have to apologize. It feels like a long time since we've done this, because we took a week off. But there was a problem. Last week, we got into the basement, we got all set up, and then we were surprised by an attack by the Legion of Doom. We're sitting here hiding as the Legion is fighting a full-on battle with the Justice League while we're trying to keep out of the way. So we weren't able to get a recording done.
There was ice and fire going everywhere.
Yeah. But we actually got in on the battle a little bit. We weren't able to do much, but I actually threw a trash can at Gorilla Grodd. It didn't do anything, but I threw it at him.
And I got a scar on my arm. I have proof.
Yeah. But as a result of this, we have a new rank. The Justice League actually knows we're in the basement now, and we're now official Junior Justice Leaguers. So we're sitting here, we're right on the ranks with Wendy and Marvin and the Wonder Dog. But we were able to get back now. Everything's relaxed. We can actually talk about what's happening in the world of DC Comics and DC Entertainment this week.
And we don't have to keep breaking a sweat every time we record, because, geez, all these superheroes, if we get messed up by one of them, I'd rather do it with Lex Luthor than Superman.
Yeah, it's a good thing they actually know we're here now. So, and actually, they gave us a little bit bigger broom closet, too.
Mm-hmm, we have room.
Yes.
Arm space.
But this show, like I said, is issue number 6. It's going out on May 7th, 2016. And actually, we have some show news. Since the last show, we are now on the Google Play Store. So we've already been on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Player. And you can always go to the WeebieGeeksPC.com. Or WeebieGeeks.net, either one to find it. That's our home for the DC Superpowers podcast. But Google Play now is running podcasts through their music player, their built-in music player, and we are available on Google Play. So just search the DC Superpowers podcast, and you can get us through there also. So,
and no, guys, it's free comic book day. So if you guys are going to go out and you're listening to this, like I said, hit us up in our social media. Let us know what we should look out for. If there's any new comic books that you guys think is really good, and we'll talk back to you guys.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely going to – I know we're meeting up at our favorite comic shop as soon as we're done recording here. That's right. We get to – as soon as we get out of the hall here and we're done talking to you guys, we're going to meet up and go Free Comic Book Day. So we'll actually – next week maybe we'll give some highlights of what we got out of Free Comic Book Day this year.
It's funny because last year I went, I didn't even go down to Kenmore Comics.
Where'd you go last year?
JC and – where was that? Downtown Quaker Square?
Ah, okay. That's Rubber City Comics now.
Oh, okay. So I have been there.
Yeah, it's the same people. They just moved.
Oh, okay.
Actually, where we're going to be later today, we may be able to go up to Carol and John's. Hmm. You ever been up there?
Nope.
Okay, I'll have to show you that one. So, but let's get into the actual show here. We actually, as always, we're going to start off with some TV news from DC Comics. And since you're still not watching Gotham, I'll bring up the Gotham news.
Good old Azrael.
Oh, yeah, Azrael was awesome. But the show rundown this past week was Azrael, Season 2, Episode 19. It says, Gordon and Bruce question Professor Strange about Project Chimera, which leads Strange to send newly resurrected Gallivant to confront Gordon. Meanwhile, Nygma investigates Professor Strange, who Professor Strange is. So, in this episode, we actually get to meet Azrael. Through Project Chimera, we know it's a genetic manipulation thing, bioengineering, but Professor Strange has figured out how to resurrect the dead. Theo Gallivant was killed by Gordon earlier this season, and Gallivant has actually brought him back from the dead. Now, he came back totally wild and killing anybody who went into the room with him. But, and he's spouting all this stuff that no one has any idea what it is. Strange finds out he's actually spouting from the sacred book of the Order of St. Damas. He's spouting verses from this book. So, they find out that basically, Gallivant's body came back, but his mind doesn't can't cope with the idea that he's alive again.
That so sounds like they might have got a little bit from the Lazarus Pit, too.
Possibly. But they have to figure out that he finds out that you got to give him a story. You got to give him a character. Since he obviously is remembering the Order of St. Dumas doctrines, Strange finally figures out, you know what? We're going to make this guy Azrael, which in the text is the avenging angel from the Order of St. Dumas. So he goes through and reprograms Gallivant to be Azrael, which anybody who's flipping out about Azrael, because Azrael is supposed to be Jean-Paul Valley and all these things, remember, in the comics, Azrael has been around since the Order of St. Dumas was around. They've always had the Azrael, and it's always just passes down from one guy to the next. So this is before Batman, but it is a version of Azrael. So that's a lot of what happened this week, and you see a lot of great scenes. There's a shot where they're in an old abandoned church, and Azrael's trying, and basically they bring back Azrael to kill Gordon. So Gordon is actually not a police officer at the moment, but he's with Barnes and the other cops looking for this guy because he's out there terrorizing the city looking for Gordon. And they're in an old church, and of course Bruce is there with them. And Azrael, to get away from being shot by the police, starts climbing the walls and looks a lot like Batman. So, and you see the look on Bruce's face that says, oh wow, this is... sweet to see. It's almost like it gave him the idea that he could do something like this in the future, and what you could actually the emotions you could spur from other people. So that was this week's Gotham. I believe next week's Gotham is called Unleashed. It's season 2, episode 20. Azrael is on the loose in Gotham City, which sparks Penguin's need for revenge. Meanwhile, Bruce enlists the help of Selina Kyle to help track down Professor Strange as he invades Arrest for his experiments. So that sounds cool, but the one after that is the one that I'm kind of excited about here. There's only 3 episodes left. Okay. The next episode is actually called Legion of the Horribles. Now, the show synopsis is Hugo Strange welcomes a familiar face to Gotham after he resurrects Fish Mooney in Indian Hill. Later, Bruce discovers a friend is in danger and teams up with Gordon, Alfred, and Lucius while uncovering more of Strange's experiments. So I'm wondering, is that Selina that's actually in trouble?
Possibly.
But
I'm trying to think of who else could be an old friend.
Also, there's another character bringing in, because Strange has been doing all these experiments. They're bringing in an former actor, Basil Carlo. Now, do you remember this name at all?
Oh! They're bringing in Clayface.
Exactly. The original Clayface is going to be on this episode. So we get Fish Mooney back, brought back from the dead, and we get Clayface.
I'm going to have to watch that episode just because of him.
Now, anybody who remembers Clayface from the animated series, that one was Matt Hagen. He was actually the third Clayface,
But he had the characteristics of Boris.
Yeah. Well, the original Clayface, Basil didn't have powers originally. He actually made his first appearance in Detective Comics number 40 back in June of 1940. He was created by Bob Kane himself, Mr. Batman. He was a once famous actor who went insane with rage when he learned that The Terror, a classic horror film he starred in, was being remade without him. To exact his revenge, Carlo dresses up as the film's villain, Clayface, and killed the members of the cast in the order in which their characters died in the film. Now, at that time, Carlo didn't have any kind of powers at all. He was just a killer in a costume. But all that changed when he came back to the comics in 1989's Mudpack story arc for Detective Comics, which was a 4-part series featuring Carlo joining forces with the other incarnations of Clayface, which was Preston Payne, Matt Hagen, and Sandra Fuller, all to take down the Batman. After they were defeated, Carlo imbued himself with the shape-shifting abilities of Clayface by taking samples of his downed allies and injected them into himself. So that's who, if anybody doesn't know who Boris Carlo is, or Basil Carlo, why don't you know what it is? That name is too close to Boris Karloff.
They did that from the playoff of exactly.
It's got to be, when it was created back then. Yeah, when it was created and stuff. Yeah, that's got to be a playoff of that.
They actually said that though. That's where they did get his name from.
Okay,
but in the Bruce Timm universe, he would mix the characters in one, like Basil and Matt Hagen. He had the name of Matt, but his whole characteristics was all from the original. Same with Green Lantern, Flash, and the Robin. He mixed 2 different characters in one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he did that with Wally Westbury, Hal Jordan, Kyle, and then was that Jason Todd and Tim Drake.
Yeah. Well, that's in 2 weeks. And like I said, that's Legion of the Horribles. Next week is Unleashed, and we only have there's only one episode after that. So, and you know everything's gonna go bananas because with Fish Mooney coming back.
And moving on to the other one, isn't there only three episodes left in Flash too? Right.
That's where we're heading next in Flash. Let me bring.
I love this episode.
Oh, this episode of Flash was phenomenal. Why don't you give us do you have it up in front of you, the show synopsis? Mm-hmm. Why don't you read the actual, what the CW's, how they describe the episode Rapture, season 2, episode 20.
All right, so episode 20, this is what happened in here. Zoom arrives back in Earth 1, intent on taking over Central City. Barry and Wells come up with a plan to stop Zoom once for all. Extremely dangerous, though. Unsure if they should take this risk, Barry reaches out to both fathers, Harry and Joe, for advice. Henry is immediately not with us. He opposes to everything. Joe thinks Barry can handle it because after everything he's been through from season one to now, he believes him. He has confidence in him. Meanwhile, while Cisco is shocked to meet his brother's doppelganger from Earth 2 villain, Rapture. Now, Rapture is the exact doppelganger of his brother on Earth 1, but he's a villain. Him and Reverb actually were brothers in the other world too, and they were, I guess, close, unlike what Cisco and his brother are on this Earth. Now, that's funny, because they're not evil, but they still couldn't get along. Rapture's trying to kill his doppelganger, just as Zoom told him, and Zoom also lied and said Cisco killed Reverb on his Earth. When that was false, he actually did it himself. And the very last part is Reverb's death is hitting Rapture pretty hard, and then Iris also opens up her feelings about Barry.
People have been waiting for two seasons for this one, for the Iris stuff.
Iris and Barry.
Because everybody knows Iris and Barry have to be together. A lot of times Iris is actually in the comics referred to Barry as Barry's lightning rod. She's the one that grounds him in reality.
And they would do that a lot also in season one, but they were never in a relationship. They were always best friends.
Yeah.
So this was something I was waiting for. It was happening, and at the time I'm thinking, they're not going to go back in time like us on season one. Don't troll us again. Let this happen.
Yeah, I think they're actually going to let it develop now.
Good. And at the very end of it, what do you think happened? Do you think he's going to go back to his own lightning bolt or what?
I got to give credit to Vicky, my wife, because did you hear this week's Geek Watch 1?
I did not listen to it.
During our live show that we did at Odd Mall, she made a prediction that she said this week Barry's going to die. And not knowing anything, just throwing that out there. And this week at the end of the show, Barry died. He'll definitely be back. I mean, Grant Gustin is still the Flash. But yeah. It's an interesting idea. That, and you see, because of what happened to Barry, all of a sudden, Jesse and Wally got zapped with the same electricity.
That was the part that made me fanboy out the most.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's going to... I'm still calling my prediction for the... by the end of this season, we're going to see four speedsters running together to take down Zoom.
So you think we're going to see Jay Garrick in there, too?
Yeah, the real Jay Garrick, please stand up.
But, yeah, I was like, good, we get to see Kid Flash and Jesse Quick. Some little... glance into the future, what's going to happen. Because after that, I know they're not going to be as fast as Flash in the show, because someone pointed out Barry had chemicals on him when the lightning hit. This was just a blast.
Well, yeah, we got to see the way they decided to do that.
But they weren't as fast as Barry in the first place, but still, they're going to have to be, I guess, his junior sidekicks.
Mm-hmm. Hey, just like us, we're junior Justice Leaguers.
Hint, hint.
So that's what happened this week. Next week, I'm all excited. You know what's next week, right?
Yeah, I think that's the Speed Force, and he's talking to these, not even alternate realities, just talking to these visions of the people that looks like Joe, Iris, all the people he knows, but they're not actually really there. He's talking, I think, to like Speed Force spirits or something like that.
Well,
and they're
also
saying that you're not going to leave. I seen the trailer. They're like, yeah, you're not leaving here, and he wants to go back home. So,
well, that's episode 21, right? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 21. Now, the description here is, with Barry gone, which we know now why, because he's dead, officially, the team must figure out a way to handle the return of an old enemy, Girder. You remember Girder from earlier in the season?
Mm-hmm.
Realizing Girder,
the second two Colossus.
Yeah. Well, realizing Girder is retracing his steps from his last attack, Iris volunteers to act as a bait to trap him in Star Labs. Meanwhile, Barry fights to return to his old life. So, and it looks like basically Barry is, anybody who remembers back to the Crisis in the mid 80s, Crisis on Infinite Earths, when Barry Allen ran and disappeared into the Speed Force.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of exploration of the Speed Force and stuff happened in the 90s with Wally. They found out that it's actually, it looks like right now, Barry is trapped in the Speed Force.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going through his memories and such as that's happening. But no, outside of the actual show itself, you know what's special about next week? This is Kevin Smith's episode.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did mention that.
So that Kevin Smith actually directed this.
Even from the trailer, it looks different from any other Flash episode. I'm just like, okay, Kevin Smith had to definitely have a hand in this.
Well, anybody who knows Kevin Smith knows that he loves comic books. I mean, this dude lives for comic books and Star Wars. He's like us. So it's going to be great. And he's been flipping out and doing everything he can to promote this episode. Because this is one of the most exciting projects he's worked on in years. And they've actually already signed him to do an episode for first half of next year.
First half? Okay.
Yeah. Good. So we should have him before the break next year. Actually, I have the promo right here. Do you want to listen through the promo?
Real quick, I want to just... I found something out earlier today, and I want to make sure I'm right. I'm looking this up. Girder from The Flash?
Yes.
I think he's the actor, Greg Finley. Make sure. Yeah, it is him. Okay, so I was watching the trailer. I'm like, Girder's back.
Yeah.
Haven't seen him in a while. Then I'm thinking, he looks a lot familiar to some other actor in a TV show I was watching.
He's been in all kinds of TV shows.
He was in iZombie.
Oh, he was? That's cool.
Yeah, he was.
He was also, go ahead.
He was Olivia's second boyfriend. And
okay.
I didn't put that together because I haven't seen him for so long. I forgot what his face looked like.
The CW does that a lot. He was also, you remember the, I think it was either a full season or half season show they did, StarCrossed? It was like a Romeo and Juliet story, but the aliens landed on Earth.
Funny,
he was on
his name was Drake in there, and there's also Drake in iZombie.
Exactly. So he's been in all kinds of stuff, a lot of stuff for like CW and such stuff like that. Let me see if I can get this.
CW's been recycling their actors. They did that with Flash and Gotham, Arrow and Flash, Arrow and Gotham. It's like, did I see this guy before?
Well,
or female before?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. That way, a lot of them, I know back in the day they used to have like contract actors that would say, okay, I work for CW. But all it is also is the CW knows these guys. Hey, I know what this guy can do. He would work for this. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Sci-Fi Channel does it. A lot of the channels like this do it. So that's Runaway Dinosaur for next week. It looks like it's going to be awesome.
That's a funny title still.
But and the cool thing with this, if I remember right, this is the first time Kevin Smith has ever directed a comic book property, an actual comic book property. I mean, his movies and stuff have
he's
comic
been writing
book type
books,
stuff.
But I guess he hasn't directed
anything. He's never done it on big screen or small screen yet.
Wow.
So this is his first foray into it, and you know he took to it like a fish to water.
Yeah, because I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about the Avengers, Green Arrow, Flash, and when he was bringing up Flash, you could hear him. He had more passion in his voice when he was talking about that for the next episode coming out.
Oh, yeah. Another thing I found interesting, there's three episodes after this week. So we have the Runaway Dinosaur. Then we have, I'm bringing it up right now in front of me, the Runaway Dinosaur. And IMDb has the names of all the episodes. Runaway Dinosaur, Invincible for the next week, and then episode 223. They don't have an episode title on there. So that tells me there's something in the title that's going to be a major spoiler for the show.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what the title could be.
Exactly.
I wonder how the season's going to exactly end, because last season surprised me. I didn't think that was going to happen. Because when Thawne died, I was like, okay, I seen that coming. Then when he ran up into the sky, I had no idea they were going to do anything like that. So we'll see. Anticipation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. These are building and building. It's getting amazing. So you ready to move on to Arrow?
Arrow? Yes.
Arrow this week was Season 2, Episode 20, Genesis. Diggle is consumed with guilt and seeks revenge. So this is something we've seen the last couple of weeks after Laurel's death. It says...
sadly, still.
Yeah.
I'm still...
I have some news on that a little bit, too. But a little later, as we're going through the Arrow stuff, I have some news on that, too. But as Oliver and Felicity look for a magical solution to defeat Dark, a vengeance-driven Diggle gets a lead on... Andy's whereabouts and heads off to confront his brother. Meanwhile, Alex takes Thea on a vacation that quickly turns into a nightmare. So this episode actually had three separate stories going, which is normal for Arrow. You have Oliver and actually somehow got a hold of Constantine, Andrew. Which last we heard, wasn't he in hell?
Mm-hmm.
So he got a hold of Constantine.
No, that wasn't going to last too long. Constantine got the wit to get out of it.
Oh, they're gonna somehow bring him back somewhere.
I like how they still mention him even though he's not on the show.
Yeah. Well, it's nice because they've added him as part of this world, so they could actually use him anytime the actor's able to get out, or anytime mm-hmm. Matt Ryan could possibly come over, or anytime they just need him. You know, they could always name drop it.
Doing another movie or a TV show right now is why he wasn't on here for the last couple episodes. So it's not like he had any contracts with it, just he wasn't able to do it.
Yeah. So they go and meet up with let me find her name again.
Yeah, because I couldn't remember that character's name for the life of me.
Dude, as soon as they were saying they were looking for someone else to help with magic, I was sitting there, Zatanna or Zatara? Zatanna or Zatara?
One of them. But I was like, we got our hopes up too much. We got Constantine. They don't want to push it. We got Mr. Terrific in here. They can't go too much further.
Oh, they can go as far as they want to go, but...
Not for this season. They're going to wait till next season.
Yeah, they got to add more that way.
Over now.
But they go see this shaman of magic, and she's basically, they want to teach Oliver how to use magic so that he can combat dark, because dark, regular attacks and such is not going to work against dark. But she tells Oliver that the secret to being able to fight against dark's magic is dark's power doesn't come from the talisman, from that idol. The power actually comes from all the people he's killed, because his dark magic is fueled by death. So, in the idol, all it does is focus it. It's Ezrin Fortuna is the name of the character, which I don't know if she's actually ever been a character anywhere, if she's created for this.
I'm going to try to look that up.
The idol, all it does is focus the power that he's already got. So, but she said straight up, if Oliver wants to fight him, if the darkness in him is stronger than the light inside of him,
mm-hmm.
all he's going to do is fuel dark even more.
I was thinking was he just needs to go back to season one's... feeling,
but that would actually fuel dark even more. Oh, okay. You gotta remember, season one was all dark.
Not gonna lie, from when I was watching it, I thought she was saying you need to go back to your dark side. Okay, so no. He needs to keep going this light path.
If this was season one, Oliver, there was no way he could even try to stop dark.
Right. Yeah, so, and that's why I like how he's becoming more of a lighter character. And Diggle mm-hmm. from this episode is becoming very dark.
So for reasons, and then we see the Diggle storyline, which. Loving the tech on this show that as soon as he steps out of where he's got his wife and daughter hiding, or Lila and I think it was a Sarah. Yeah. Lila and Sarah are hiding in a mobile safe house. It's basically the trailer of a truck. But as soon as he steps out, his phone goes off and it's facial recognition software that Felicity runs in the arrow or the quiver or whatever you want to call it, the arrow cave. But
the arrow.
So he knows where his brother is now. And obviously, everybody's told him, don't go anywhere near Andy because you on your own cannot take down Hive. But he doesn't listen because he's got all this revenge in his brain. Mm-hmm. And he takes off and goes after Andy. And obviously, he gets taken down because it was a trap anyway. And so this whole episode is him fighting against Andy back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then the next scene you see is Speedy, Thea, waking up in this Pleasantville-type place.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem right. She's there with, what's his name? Half a second, I'll have it.
This is what happens when you search on Yahoo and not Google. I'm trying to get on IBDM and nothing's happening right now.
Yeah. It's, where'd it go? I have the whole show rundown in front of me.
There you go.
Thea. But she's with her boyfriend, which off the top of my head, it's not coming in. But... and they're in this beautiful house. He's making breakfast. That's why he disappeared. But, and then as this goes and they're there, they went for a walk and she notices something wrong. It's almost like all the sounds in the background, the birds chirping, a dog barking, these types of things are on a loop. They're doing the same thing over and over again. Like you hear a couple of bird chirps, a dog bark, then like a couple more bird chirps, then maybe another dog bark or something. They're natural sounds, but it's the same ones over and over again.
Making them not natural.
Also, one thing I noticed that she never mentioned was you don't see any cars or any other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the whole place is deserted. It's beautiful, but it's deserted. And then they find that he's taking vitamins, and they look exactly like the pills Dark gives. Yeah, they look exactly like the pills Dark gives to his soldiers. And then he says, oh, they were given by his boss, who is the mayor, who is Dark's wife. So things just start adding up and it's not right. Not right. You can't figure out what it is. Well, you end up finding out it is Alex. Okay. Alex is his name.
Oh, okay.
But we find out they're actually inside of a bunker underground with like holograms on the walls to extend it out. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're in this little walled-in city. And what that is we find out later on in the show that the overall plan, we know Dark wants to destroy the world. They have what the plan is called Genesis. And what it is they have a bunker so that certain people can live, and Dark steals from Lila the codes to launch every nuclear missile in the world. Basically destroy the entire planet except for who's in his safely hidden Genesis. It's the biblical story of the flood, except instead of water destroying the world, he's going to do it with nuclear radiation. And he has his ark already built. So going into the last three episodes of the season,
he reminds me a little bit of Ra's al Ghul when it came to that.
Yeah.
A lot of Ra's, actually.
Well, every season so far has had someone who wanted to destroy everything and restart. You notice that? Mm-hmm. The first season, we had Malcolm Merlyn, who wanted to destroy the city to rebuild it so that he could save the city by destroying it. Ra's al Ghul was the same way. Let's destroy the world and bring it up in my own image. Damian Dark's doing the same thing now. So, but
and I'm looking up to make sure she is a real character. From here, it looks like she was just for the show. I can't really find any wiki on her.
Well, they may be done adding new characters for this season. So, but it looks like the next three episodes are going to be all about stopping Damian Dark from destroying the world. So, next episode is actually called Monument Point. Let me make sure that the date is right. Yes, Monument Point. It's Noah Cutler is back with the team. When Team Arrow learns that Damian Dark's next move is learns what Damian Dark's next move is, Felicity realizes she needs to ask her father, Noah Cutler, for help. Noah and Oliver have a heart-to-heart that leaves Oliver rattled. So everyone remembers from earlier, her dad is actually a character called the Calculator, which is a villain who is basically her opposite. He is as good a hacker as she is. So looks like he's coming back next week, and they're going to have to use him and her together to try to figure out how to stop this. And then you can see that Ollie and Felicity are talking some more now. So I'm thinking we're going to slowly get them to where they get back together.
Hopefully. Yeah.
You still not liking that?
No, still not with that whole Felicity and Ollie thing.
Well, since Laurel is never coming back, unfortunately, that's what we're stuck with. So, and actually, I like it because it's been an organic thing. It was not planned from the beginning that this would happen.
I don't know what they had planned from the beginning when they were...
I think in the very beginning, they were planning on having Laurel and Ollie together. But
yeah, I was hoping they would did. I mean,
when Emily Rickards came in and did Felicity, it was supposed to be a one-off character, maybe two episodes. That's it, as a guest star. But she nailed it so much, and everybody loved her so much that they kept bringing her back and made her a full-time character. She was not signed on to be that.
I just don't like the Arrow in Felicity or Ollie in Felicity.
Well, anybody who was wondering about Laurel coming back and is like, well, they're supposed to be together no matter what. Stephen Amell was actually on Larry King talking about Arrow. And Larry King says, Laurel was killed off this year. Viewers couldn't hear her final words. Do you know what they were? Stephen Amell says, I do know. I do know what they were, but it's going to remain a secret because, much like Greg Berlanti says, we like to surprise the viewers. So Larry King is, any chance that she'll come back from the dead? And Stephen Amell just says no. Simply no, just simply no. So Laurel Lance, as far as the show is concerned, is dead 100%.
Yeah.
So, now the rumors of her coming, of the Earth 2 Laurel coming over, that might be something there. We don't know, but as of right now, Laurel and the Black Canary with Laurel is dead.
Yeah, they were saying that, this, guy, on YouTube was saying that, she's dead, but just cause that don't mean they can't bring back Earth 2 counterparts, kind of how they did Power Girl and Supergirl.
Exactly. So,
I think he said in the Earth 2, where like Zoom is his world is, this Black Canary actually does have the real powers of the Sonic Scream. So yes, there is nothing on her. So this one would be more closer to the comic books than what the lore we saw. So that gave me that made me a little happy. So there is a chance they could get together.
Yeah. So
we'll see. And plus the actress will be back too.
So moving on from there, we have which both of us actually watched this morning. I had to get up early so I could watch Arrow. With all the craziness that happened at the end of this week and recovering for this battle, from recovering from the battle and helping the league there, I wasn't able to watch Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow until this morning. And full disclosure, guys, it's like 10 o'clock right now, or 10:30. So I got up at 7 o'clock this morning to watch Arrow and Legends so we could talk about it here with you guys.
But, yeah, and the same thing for me for Legends. I actually watch Arrow surprisingly. I think I got out of class and I just said, oh, I'm going to watch this. I usually just wait till I watch with Legends and everything.
Yeah. Well, this week was Legends of Tomorrow's after it was called River of Time. After numerous attempts and many different time periods, the team has successfully captured Vandal Savage as of last week.
Finally.
However, Savage tells Kendra that he can reunite her with Carter, so that now she struggles with whether or not she should kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Rip decides that they will deliver Savage to the Time Masters, which doesn't sit well with Snart or Rory, and the duo decide it may be time to take the jump ship and return to their old life. Meanwhile, Savage taunts Ray about his place in Kendra's life. So this almost felt like a filler episode, kind of. They had technical problems that got them stuck in the time stream, and they couldn't get out because the ship was all messed up and stuff. And basically gave everybody a chance for the characters to just interact with each other and talk back and forth there. Did this feel almost like a money-saving episode to you? Because there wasn't much on the special effects. They didn't have to do any of that type of stuff.
Yeah, I heard a couple fans saying how they felt like it was a filler or they kind of felt a little let down with the story that happened, but I'm like, we've seen this coming. This episode to me, I didn't feel like it was a money saver too much. Well, I guess it was a money saver. I wouldn't call it a filler.
Yeah, because they didn't have to have much in the way of extras. Action. They didn't have to bring in any of that stuff.
Yeah, there was no big fight scene. At the very end when, Vandal Savage was shooting at Captain Cold was about it.
Yeah. Well, the one thing we did get on this episode was at the end of the episode, we find out, Carter, who was basically brainwashed by Savage, so he was never awoken. He never knew that he was Carter. It's the Carter from the future, from where Savage is at. And so Kendra's trying to, the whole episode, Kendra's trying to wake him up to tell him he's Carter. Ray is trying to deal with the fact that his girlfriend, a fiance, has her old boyfriend, and she's trying to wake him up.
Mm-hmm. It's a big love triangle, but I love the way they did this one. I really did. I'll touch more on that once you get done.
But then you have Mick and Rory deciding whether or not they want to stay or go or anything like that. You have Jax actually trying to fix the time drive and gets zapped with temporal radiation, which actually causes him to start rapidly age.
That sounds like something we just saw from Flash a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Can you explain that to me? Because when I was watching that, I got what happened, but what did Stein do to save him? I was a little lost on that.
They did OMG science, and Stein figured out that if he sent, because they found the jump ship, which we've seen many times in the show, has a one-time use time drive, and it's already preset to 2016 to bring him back to the moment they left. And Stein figured out somehow mathematically or something that if he would send Jax back through the time stream, it would dissipate the temporal radiation or whatever and reverse the effects of what happened to him. So he basically, a one-time use, sends Jax back to home. Which is kind of weird because you'd think for the finale of the show, they're going to want Firestorm together.
See, that's why I was... Well, why did he say tell my wife I loved her? That's why I was...
Because Jax is going back to where they left. And Stein doesn't know whether or not they're going to actually live through this.
I see. Okay. I was confused on how he was sending him back and where... Okay.
Yeah.
That's really odd, because what I was thinking since I was a little lost, I'm thinking, so is he not going to meet up with Stein anymore, or is he going to go back with Rory?
That's what I'm wondering.
What was the first Firestorm? I don't know why it's slipping my mind.
Oh,
right,
Ronnie?
Now.
Well, Ronnie's dead, remember?
We don't know that.
Well, actually, as far as
we really don't know
dead.
If he's dead. The Ronald on Earth 2 we know is dead, but from that one, they never showed it. He just went up into that black hole.
Yeah. But, well, no, as far as we know, Ronnie's dead. I don't think he's coming back, but that you never know.
Well, I mean, the reason I say he's not dead, he probably won't be back on the show for like a long period of time, but he's definitely, I think, going to make a cameo. Because depending on how they're going to do this whole Stein and Jax thing, in the comics after a while, it was Stein and Ronnie, then it was Stein and Jax. Then Stein left and it was Jax and Ronnie. So I was thinking maybe that might happen at some point.
Yeah, well, that's who, Firestorm in the Legends of Tomorrow comic right now is, Firestorm is Ronnie and Jax.
Oh, so how far did you get into this one?
I've a couple pages. That's it. I've not actually got into that much, but it is one I'm going to keep buying. I'm going to read through. I just need to have time to sit down and read it.
It's a thick book, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what I was going to touch on was I love the triangle between Hawkman, Adam and Hawkgirl.
Yeah. Yeah, that's getting interesting.
I've seen them on screen together like this since the Super Friends cartoon.
Yeah. It seems like there's always conflict when it comes to the Hawks.
It is, but I like how they're portraying it because it's like that in the books. You know how many times they've redone their origin story?
Yeah.
So, they're aliens, they're Egyptians, they're goddesses. It's all over the place. But I like how they really show that. Like, even for the fans, it's like they're not together, but that's her soulmate. They're not together right now, but
they have to be at some
together.
Point.
Yeah, so I like how they stress that.
So, but Legends, let me look up. That was most, like I said, there wasn't a whole lot. I mean, I've enjoyed every episode of this. But it wasn't like the episode about, what's his name? Jonah Hex. That one was phenomenal. I loved everything about that.
Yeah, me and my mom watched that, and we were complaining how we didn't think Jonah Hex had enough action scenes. But I was saying, I guess from what they gave us, what was he going to do? He didn't want to interfere at all. He was more so, this is your guys' problem. I have nothing to do with this. So why would I get in the way of it?
So, in the way of previews, next week's episode is Destiny. There's actually only two episodes of Legends left.
Oh, something. That's right, because they didn't have a long season like a Flash and Arrow.
Yeah, leading into the next episode, we do need to talk about the next what happened at the end of the episode. So they found out Ronnie and Ray figured out studying the when they were trying to fix Ray's suit after the battle with the giant robot last week that the robot actually was using technology from farther in the future than the 2164 was it that they were in? They're at 2164 London or something like that.
Exactly.
It was in the 2160s.
They were up there.
But this is using technology from even farther in the future than that, which Rick figures out, wait a minute, that means that he's using temporal technology somehow. So he's a threat to the timeline. That means that this is exactly what the Time Masters are trying to stop. So, of course, they're going to want to stop. He could actually take Savage to the Time Masters and they'll deal with him. Well, they get to the...
Did you see this coming, too?
Nah, I kind of did towards the end of it. Just because it's like, you know what? This is too easy. And there's a couple episodes left.
Yeah. After what had happened with Kronos and... what was her name? When she went back in time to kill them as babies. What was she called?
Pilgrim.
Yeah, once they sent the Pilgrim, I'm like, these aren't good guys. These are villains. They're going to stop at any risk to kill them, and they're heroes. So, I mean, the GCPD, even with Batman, never went that far, and they're the law, and they're basically the law for them. They wouldn't do this. So that's when I said they're bad guys. And then when he brought Vandal, all I could think was he probably should not talk that much because he's going to get out some way.
Yeah.
And look what happened.
Well, we have the next up... for next week, well, we find out at the end of this, before I get to the next week, is they take Savage, put him in front of the council, and they're wanting to prosecute Rip, which we already know that because he stole the ship and all this stuff, but now he's like, you know what, this is why I did it. He's actually stolen temporal technology, and he's using it to affect the timeline now. And you find out, the Time Masters know this, and they don't care, because he's not actually having, as far as they're concerned, he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. So now... Rip Hunter and the entire team are in jail with the Time Masters. And that's the end of the episode. So, for next episode, it's actually called Destiny. And then the last episode, which looks awesome, is actually called Legendary. So maybe now this is where they get their legendary status on that one. Mm-hmm. But for Destiny, the synopsis says, captured. Being in the vicinity of the Time Masters leaves Rip and Rory incredibly disturbed for very different reasons. Meanwhile, Sarah takes over the Wave Rider... Kendra is reunited with Carter, and Snart decides that he might be a hero after all. Are we going to get Citizen Cold?
Yeah. We've been teasing that since The Flash season one.
Yeah. I don't think they'll call him that.
Good
but
in him.
I don't think they'll call him that, but even in the comic books, Snart always is, he's a bank robber. He's not a killer. Yeah. He's not. Well, that's The Flash's villains in general. Most of them are not Batman's rogues. They're not.
Yeah, the only
serial
one that ever came that
crazies.
Dark to it was Professor Zoom, or Reverse Flash for Professor Zoom.
Exactly. Most of the guys for Flash are bank robbers, or they're causing mayhem in other ways or whatever. They're having a good time. They're not trying to kill people.
Yeah, and Grodd was in his own lane. Grodd reminded me somewhat of Brainiac for Superman. They were in their own little villain thing. They'd had different objectives that no one else had. It's like, I want to take over the world for this reason. I want to rob for this reason. If I do rob, it's to get to my goal to do this. And if I take over the world, it's the way I want it to be so everybody can live in peace, not destruction.
Yeah. So
same as Brainiac. He wanted to do the same thing, just keep them in little tiny bubbles.
There was one more story I got to find here. And if I don't find it, I'm not worried about it. But they had a tease on some of the casting for next season. Oh, here it is. DC Comics Legends Tomorrow adds two mystery heroes for next season. They put out the casting, some of the casting things for the new for next season's Legends of Tomorrow, which we know is going to be a full season, and it's running along with Arrow and Flash from the beginning. And now the two characters that they're looking for, the characters are being touted as a series regulars for next year's show. That World War II will be a key part of the second season, possibly throwing fuel on the fire of the rumors that Alan Scott will be the caped mystery hero who appears at the end of season one. So I guess there's a mystery hero at the end of season one. But these are the actual quotes from TV Line. The descriptions for the characters that they're looking for is a male in his late 20s to mid-30s being sought to play a guy who grew up in the shadow of his World War II hero grandfather and has used a Han Solo-like facade to conceal his insecurities. Until that is, the development of superpowers enables him to live up to his family's legacy. And the female member of an elite parliamentary or paramilitary team living in the 1940s, an African-American, she is scrutinized in her time for both her gender and race, thus has worked twice as hard to be a perfect soldier. That said, she blames herself and aims to avenge the death of a team member for whom she had repressed feelings. So, and according to comicbook.com, they're seeing as the case for the second character could be Lady Blackhawk. And it seems like
they're going to change her race.
Possibly.
Okay, because I'm thinking for her, I was like, there's not one person one character I can think of that is described like that in the comics at all. There is not a black female lead, not like that, except for Vixen.
Yeah, well, so. Especially not back in the 40s.
No, but yeah.
But this looks like it's probably going to, and they even said here, the first character says could be any number of people with JSA ties. And during Geoff Johns' run on JSA, he introduced a lot of legacy characters. Sand is possibly a good idea, and Steel, the original Steel, not John Henry Irons.
It's funny you say that, because when you said Steel,
yeah, you want to make me think
Captain Steel?
I don't know. It just said the name Steel. Yeah. So, hopefully, it says DC's upfront presentation is coming in about another week, and from there, we may actually find some more information. Yeah, so, to think about. Who are these characters, possibly?
You think it might be Charles and Rock. We'll figure this out later on, even in our episodes, who it might be.
Exactly. So, that's, I think, it for Legends of Tomorrow for this week. Now moving on, actually, Supergirl's over for the season. We still have not been confirmed on what we're doing for a second season, but we do have some news from Supergirl. I guess Warner Brothers TV is actually considering moving Supergirl's production to Vancouver. They said apparently the production, supposedly this year's Supergirl production was not given the tax credit that you can get from the California Film Commission. That made its budget actually a little higher than normal. So they're thinking move to Vancouver, where they actually film all the rest of their DC shows, the Legends, Flash, Arrow, all of those are filmed in Vancouver. Moving there would definitely be cheaper to film, but it'd be more obviously more difficult for the stars of the show to actually be there because they'd have to move to Vancouver for a certain amount of time. Now it says a literal move to Vancouver and a possible network move from CBS to the CW are two possibilities.
Ooh. With the actors moving, I was thinking iZombie. The actress portrayed in there, she had to do the same thing because she's from not Brazil. I can't think of, but she's foreign, so she lives somewhere else and she has to come here to shoot.
Yeah, well, they said they're also looking at possibly switching networks from CBS to the CW,
which would be
all
great.
Let me kill that. You gotta love ads. Oh, and they're not even giving me a chance to get rid of it.
Now that's when they're really nice to you, aren't they?
Yeah. Close that, but I can do this. There we go. Stupid ads. But it says the the move and the move of networks are both possibilities since it's still actually on the bubble of CBS. We don't know which way they're going to go with it. They said the license fee charged by Warner Brothers to CBS for using Supergirl could also be lowered to help save money. Mm-hmm. They said it really what they're it looks like here what they're worried that the show costs too much for CBS to keep going. CBS may say, you know what, this is just too much for what we're getting out of it. So they said the CW or digital platform could step in to save it if CBS decides to drop it.
All I'm going to say is do the right thing, that like what Disney and Marvel does. It seems like everything with them is with the right company. If Warner Brothers, CW, and DC Comics are all together, CW probably should just let them take it over.
Possibly. Well, no, I think they got it right because they have the right people making it. What it is the CBS needs to give it a chance to actually grow. Give it a chance to move to give them a second season, give them the full thing, and see what they can do and actually stay hands-off and say, you know what, just make a show and let's see what it looks like. Because you can tell that they're making the show for the executives right now.
The thing is with that is if they do. With CW, I know they would.
Yeah, CW would let them do it.
They would say, hey, run with it, do what you want to do.
Exactly.
So that's why I said I think it should just go there.
Yeah, the CW, every one of their comic book shows they've had so far, when they first start the show, is farther steeped in comic books than the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Arrow started as a vigilante show, and this is what we wanted to see. And they've progressed since then. Flash came in. He was Flash first episode.
Right.
Legends, when they started when they started Legends, they said, hey, let's get a whole group of superheroes all working together, flying through time.
And each one of them characterized they did right, too.
Exactly.
That's why I think I stuck on Legends, probably best. It was probably one of my favorite TV shows out of the whole year.
Mm-hmm. It's been really good. So, that's it for the TV news for this week. We have one quick cinematic news. You got that article, Vernon?
Yeah,
let us know what's going on here.
I'm going to tell you guys what the article says. I'm going to give you my opinion of it because this is something pretty touchy for me. Okay. Zack Snyder will direct the film of Justice League. Following the efforts of Man of Steel and Batman Dawn of Justice, the screenwriters Chris Terrio is retrying the script. Affleck is rumored to direct a standalone Batman film, but as an exclusive producer, that's not too surprising.
Executive producer.
Sorry.
The main gist of this story was the fact that Ben Affleck has now this week been added as executive producer for the Justice League movie,
mm-hmm.
which I think will help because that he will have a little more guiding hand over the way the film goes.
Exactly, which we definitely need. Warner Brothers, this is the part that bothers me. Warner Brothers is still figuring out exactly how to approach the superhero films. Batman vs. Superman was largely disliked by critics and has been divided against audience as much as the heroes on whether to enjoy or dislike the dark tale on the take of the characters. Affleck has written several films, won an Oscar, as for the efforts from Argo and his other projects, including Gone Baby Gone, The Town. He'll join the screen Justice League with Henry Cavill, Gal Gadot, Jason Momoa, Ray Fisher, and Ezra Miller.
Well, so go ahead.
I was going to say, here's my problem of this whole thing right here. DC is still figuring out how to approach the superhero films.
Well, see, it's not DC that's figuring this out. It's Warner Brothers trying to figure it out.
I'm
like
sorry.
Like I said, Warner if DC Brothers. Comics was making these movies and was loud, like Disney did with Marvel Studios.
Marvel, yeah.
And said, you know what? You guys make comic books, make movies.
Right.
If Warner Brothers would do that and start like a DC Comics Studios or something like that and let them work, I think we would have a lot better stuff.
The only problem with this is my opinion, they're stuck on these Nolan films. Those were phenomenal. The whole Batman, Joker being a Dark Knight tale. It was dark. It was gritty. That works because it was Batman. It's not going to work for everybody else.
Well, you got to look at this was pointed out to me earlier this week that if you look at Warner Brothers and their comic book movies since the year 2000,
mm-hmm.
starting from the year 2000 till now, last 15 years, they've had three phenomenally successful dark Batman movies.
Yes.
They made two other comic book movies. No, Jonah Hex was in there too, but that we didn't know what was that was going to do to start with. But the two lighter comic book movies that would have had lightness and stuff were Superman Returns, which did okay in the box office. I liked that movie, but a lot of people did not.
I didn't like it, but I feel the same way you feel with Superman Returns as people feel about Green Lantern. I like Green Lantern.
Yeah, I like Green Lantern.
I'm not
going to
say it's the best movie ever.
That was
the next...
That was the next one I was going
for. They did with Ryan Reynolds, I was like, that's a good Hal Jordan. I just don't think they gave enough open. They weren't open enough to make the character what he should have been all together around the world.
Well, that, and I think it was
the Mac universe.
It was the same problem that a bunch of other comic book movies in the, when we've been starting this new comic book movie renaissance have had, where they tried to put too much too soon.
Yeah, and it seems like Warner Brothers has a problem with that. The reason, yeah, out of all these lists, the one that I think came closest to the Dark Knight movies was Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Because critics liked it. It didn't make a lot at the box office, but overall it was one of the better movies they've made. And the reason why I think it was so good, they focused just on Superman. They didn't want to add all these other characters. And even like the Green Lantern, that had all the other Lantern cops into that movie. Then you had the Parallax. Then you had Star Sapphire's little minor role. With Man of Steel, they just focused on him, what happened to his world. They didn't focus too much on his family as much as they should have in other movies. So I think that's why it was so good. They just took it. They went slow. They thought about it, then overcrowded.
Yeah.
And plus, Superman's not really too much of a dark character. No, it was a darker tone, but they didn't make him. They didn't make him gritty. You know what I mean? They made it a little dark, but wasn't gritty. And I don't know if you heard about this, and also to the fans, there has been about three directors that dropped out of the Splash movie and the Aquaman movie.
Yeah.
Because the directors see the character as one way, but Warner Brothers keeps telling them, no, we want the character to be this kind of dark or this way. And it's like, well, there goes my script because I'm not working on this. I already had it. If you guys don't like it, bye.
Yeah.
And then, so.
Well, hopefully, I think a lot
I'm
of
worried
this,
about that.
A lot of this is going to be told once we get done with Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman.
Because
Suicide Squad already, which is weird to think of, Suicide Squad looks like it's going to be a lighter tale.
Mm-hmm.
On the villains, whereas Batman vs. Superman was super dark. You'd think it would be the other way around.
You would think
it looks
that.
Like there's going to be a lot more fun in Suicide Squad, and we'll see how they react to that.
My fingers are crossed. Like I said, I still like the Batman vs. Superman movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure I like this, but I'm worried about, like, critically, where is this going to go?
Yeah.
And I was at the barbershop a couple days ago, and then I was out at the bar telling people this, and some of them didn't really understand where I was coming from. I still do not see Will Smith's Deadshot and Ben Affleck's Batman in the same movie fighting against each other.
I don't see them against each other.
I just don't see them together because it's like two complete different tones. Just from the trailer of the Suicide Squad and what Batman vs. Superman was.
Yeah.
Two complete different movies. It seems so much lighter. Like, of course, it's violence in it and it's gritty, but they're having fun with it. With Batman vs. Superman, I didn't see any fun at all. I just felt like they went in, made a movie, said, here's what we got, take it. With Suicide Squad, it seems like they're actually having fun on set. They got to know each other, and you can see it on the screen, at least from the trailer. They look like they had a good time making this movie.
Yeah.
Not saying they didn't have a good time making the movie for Batman vs. Superman, but it looked like they did more for a job.
Yeah. Well, on Batman vs. Superman, remember, we've beaten this one to death, but it's Zack Snyder, I think. I think it's just the way he makes movies.
I'm going to blame Zack Snyder and Warner Brothers. I'm going to say this hand in hand.
Yeah, Warner Brothers hired Zack Snyder to do this.
Yeah, well, I think they hired Zack Snyder to do it because he's like, hey, I got the same idea you guys have. And it's like, honestly, you do not want to have the same idea as Warner Brothers has with this cinematic universe. Because honestly, they haven't been going on a good path for everyone. Like I said, they're good with the gritty part. And I get Warner Brothers and DC are darker than compared to Marvel and Disney. But you have light characters. You have Flash. You have Superman.
You gotta let them have fun.
Exactly. And somebody said this. What Captain America was in Civil War should have been how Superman was portrayed in Batman vs. Superman, because they're both Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
But they still have their own mindset of what's wrong and what's right.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I got to say. Just hopefully with Ben Affleck doing this, getting some help in there, it'll be a little bit. Like I said, the movie's good. It doesn't fit all the characters.
Mm-hmm. Where do you want to go next? Do you want to do the collectibles or do you want to go on to the comic shop news? The collectibles, we had a couple of stories, guys. There's a new...
Yeah.
You want to hit those? There's just a new Arkham Knight Nightwing figure coming. We can do it real quick.
Did you want to hit the Catwoman and Batman since that was...
Yeah, we'll hit them real quick. Sideshow, and this is PlayArts Kai's Arkham Knight line is actually getting a new Nightwing figure, which looks really sweet. It's coming out... it'll be $115 being released in August. The pictures are all up online. It looks amazing. It has a now if you've seen any of the other figures, it fits right in the line with those. It actually comes with a full set of accessories with his batons, with a couple of shock sticks, a batarang, and like two sets of hands depending on what he was going to be carrying.
Yep. open and close for if you want to make him look like he's going to punch somebody, you can actually put his accessories in his hand.
They don't exactly
say how tall the figure is, but if you are a fan of the Arkham Knight or Arkham series games in general, you will want to pick up this figure.
Yeah, he looks amazing.
I know it's over $100, but it's definitely worth it.
Well, that's a whole lot more affordable than the next set we got.
Exactly.
Sideshow is actually taking pre-orders now for, they have the Batman 66 and the Julie Newmar Catwoman from Batman 66.
Mm-hmm.
And these look phenomenal. I mean, if you've ever seen Sideshow statues, these are amazing with how realistic they get them looking. I mean, they look like they could actually walk right off their base.
And I love how they do that every time. I had a picture of one of these and showed it to my mom. She was like, oh, that's a good picture of him. And I'm like, you know what this is, right? She's like, that's a picture from the movie, right? It's like, nope, it's a toy. She's like, what?
Well, these I would not call toys because you could pre-order both of them at $450 for the Batman and $420 for the Catwoman.
Jeez.
So
that's more than a paycheck for me.
Yeah.
So
that's way too much for me. But although we are taking we will take sponsorship, Sideshow. If you want to send us one of these, we would not turn it down.
And if you guys sent these to us, I will have an open box video on YouTube ready to shoot. I'll review it on YouTube. I'll shout you guys out, give them the link and everything. We will support you guys, but we just, you know.
We will pimp anybody.
Heck yeah.
So that's what popped up in the collectible spotlight for this week. We have two news articles out of the actual comic book news. First one is the Joshua Williamson, who's actually bringing back the Flash during Rebirth, and he's going to be writing the monthly comic. Has he's actually signed an exclusive deal with DC Comics now. And he's actually bringing a new title to Vertigo, a 6-issue miniseries called Frostbite. Now, Jason Sean Alexander, who did Batman Arkham City and The Empty Zone, is actually going to be doing the art on the book, and Williamson's going to be writing it. Now, according to Jim Lee, Josh is a fantastic writer, and we couldn't be more excited to have him on board. He has a knack for telling stories that really grab a hold of the readers, and it comes through whether he's writing an epic superhero fiction or more edgy and darker tales. Well, we get to see both of these out of him coming up, because in Flash, you're going to get the epic superhero tales, and the darker and more edgy tales is what this Frostbite's going to be. The description for Frostbite is, it follows Keaton, a South American woman, and a coyote, a human trafficker specializing in... Oh, she's a South American woman and a coyote. A human trafficker specializing in no-questions-asked transportation of people across dangerous landscapes. Decades earlier, the world entered a new ice age. Though the remaining populace has survived and adapted to the frozen environment using new technology, the weather is not their biggest danger. A new disease, nicknamed Frostbite, is making its way across the remaining communities, and it literally turns people into ice, slowly freezing the moisture in their cells. Keaton and her crew are tasked with transporting two scientists from Mexico to a science lab on Alcatraz, where they are working on a cure, but it should be pretty easy. After all, it's only an elderly man and his daughter, and his adult daughter. But when the transport is attacked, Keaton finds out that the scientist and his daughter have a bounty on their heads, and this simple transport job becomes very, very complicated. Now, Williams also on this says, Williams himself said, for a comic book writer, this is a dream come true. There aren't too many people that get a chance to not only write The Flash, one of my all-time favorite characters, but also work with Vertigo, a publisher that's been a huge influence on my writing style. DC Comics is an important company to me. I love these characters, I've loved these characters all my life, and an opportunity to add to their mythology is amazing. It's an honor to be part of it. So that's what Williams said about it. Now, he's like I said, he gets the duties of writing Flash from Rebirth on, and he's got this new one, Frostbite. So what do you think about Frostbite here?
It's a little different from what I'm used from Vertigo, but it's not too bad. I'd be willing to give it a shot.
Yeah,
it's going in the right direction. It's got some good riders on it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's going to be similar to like a post-apocalyptic type tale, except for across the frozen instead of across like a desert wasteland.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's honestly seems like what these spin-off of DC's comics, you know, like Vertigo's a spinoff really of what DC, and then you got like the Hanna-Barbera properties. So like they're all going apocalyptic. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it seems like it.
You got Scooby-Doo, it's an apocalyptic world, then same with Wacky Raceland, and then you got this, and also the Flintstones are BC?
Yeah.
You want to say? So none of these are really dealing with the now, which is, I think, a cool concept.
Yeah.
It was something a little different.
So
I'm picking all of them up at some point.
Actually, I think that brings us to the point now where are you ready to take our weekly trip?
Yes, to...
to the comic shop. Okay, and once again, we've come to the weekly comic book shop, and I want to thank the Shazbots once again for providing the theme song for us. You can find them on Facebook to get more information about them. They're an awesome band, and I want to we can't say enough about thanking them for helping us out by letting us use the song there. So, Vernon, now this does not have the free Comic Book Day picks, guys. This is just what's coming out next week for Comic Book Day. I believe it is May 11th. So
now I will post our what we get today on our from the comic book free comic book day on our Instagram, so you can take out and look at all the photos that we get from there.
Oh yeah. So what do you have as your number one?
My number one, of course, has to be Swamp Thing. Anything Swamp Thing related. This is Swamp Thing issue number 5. Alec Holland joins Nadia Parbat to seek a way to fix the chaos he has unleashed by wishing for his humanity back. See, you always have these repercussions, as nothing's always free. But we'll be a little too late with the guest appearance from Deadman. Once again, another Dark Justice League member. Anytime a Dark Justice League member gets in there with another, it's going to be a good book.
Awesome. And who's the writer and artist and stuff for that?
The writer for this, Lynn Wynn. And the art is done by Kelly Jones and covered by Kelly Jones. So,
awesome.
Only two people.
Well, my number one is a final for this numbering run. It's Action Comics number 52. And it's kind of interesting. I when they first announced Rebirth, I didn't realize, but now you see it. They're ending all the everything before Rebirth is ending at number 52. All the ones that started with the 52. So that's kind of fun. But it's Action Comics number 52. The final days of Superman continue as two Supermen meet at last. The pre-New 52 Superman meets the current Kal-El, but Solar Superman wants to be the only Man of Steel left standing. And divided they may fall as one Clark Kent must choose the safety of his family before either version of himself. So actually, I just started reading. I've bought the first two issues of Lois and Clark. So it's an interesting story because the first issue comes right at the same time as Justice League War, the volume one of Justice League. And you can see he's actually standing back watching them fight Darkseid. But this is going to be interesting. This is actually going to be the meeting of the two Supermen that we're going to see going forward through Rebirth and beyond. But this one was art is done by Fernando Passerin and is written by Peter J. Tomasi. So that's coming out this week, and what do you have for your second pick?
The second one, I didn't even know he was even back in the New 52 at all. I don't know too much about the character, but he's one of those characters I'd been wanting to get into, just, I guess, haven't had the time to, or just haven't had the biggest interest in doing it till I get everything else done with all the characters. This is Earth 2 Society number 12. The character on this cover is actually Captain Steel. I noticed that, and I was like, I gotta pick this up, I'm interested. What role do superheroes play in a new world where society has a rebuild itself from the ground up? Two cities are about to go to war over limited resources, and the new Earth 2 is the beginning for a look at familiar and old one. Can Captain Steel and Power Girl stop the fight before it starts? So from reading that, like I said, Power Girl is the Supergirl on Earth 2. She's a little bit more mature and a little bit more powerful. Captain Steel was a member of the Justice League, but I didn't know they even brought him back for the New 52. But it doesn't look
was
like
he
he's
a
on
member
our
of
world.
The league, or
he's
was he a member too. Of? Was he a member of the league, or was he an old Justice Society member?
He might have been just Society. Man, like I said, I don't know too much about him, but I know. Well, I guess I'm taking this from the cartoon. He was on Justice League Unlimited and didn't have a speaking role. He was just one of those characters you would see in the background.
Well, that would have confused a lot of the kids anyway, because Steel was on that show too.
Exactly. That's why he was called Captain Steel.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he was actually on a title that had Steel in it. No, he was Justice League of America.
Okay.
So.
Cool.
Yeah. He wasn't, I guess, on the real Justice League. Now, he could actually, from what I'm reading here, he could be on the show from what we're talking about from Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because his stories were set in the World War II.
Okay. Cool.
This could. That because, you know, Legends of Tomorrow was for like the minor characters in DC that no one really knew or cared about, and it brought them onto the screen.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Okay. Well, next up for me is number three. It's Legends of Tomorrow number three. Now, remember, this one's an anthology comic, guys, so there's four separate stories in this. It says, the legends continue with four acclaimed teams bringing you all new thrills and adventures. Story one is Metamorpho, written by Aaron Lopresti. The art is by Aaron Lopresti and Matt Banning. Metamorpho and Sapphire have been transported to another planet, one torn apart by war over the orb that gave Metamorpho his powers. Meanwhile, the alien criminal Kanjar Ro isn't too far behind, planning to steal the orb by any means necessary. Next up, you have Firestorm the Nuclear Man, written by Jerry Conway and art by Edward Paniska and Rob Hunter. Ronnie and Stein are back together as Firestorm, but as they struggle to work together again, Major Force shows up with nothing but punches and fists to the face. Don't miss this all-out action fight scene issue. Next up, we got Sugar and Spike, written by Keith Giffen and art by... Oh, wow, I'm going to destroy this name.
Mm-hmm.
Belquis Evely? Or Evely? When an ex from Wonder Woman's past threatens to expose their relationship on daytime television, Sugar and Spike are on the case. Will our heroes uncover the secret and horrible agenda that guides this menace's hand before it's too late? And then finally, you have The Metal Men, written by Len Wein, art by Ildiri.
Yeah, some of these names get you.
Yeah. Ildiri Sinar and Trevor Scott. That one's easy. The Metal Men face off against a threat who might make them lose their breath and their chance for escape. Meanwhile, General Skeletti begins his own plan or her own plan to capture the Metal Men. So that's all in Legends of Tomorrow. Now, this one's going to cost a little bit more, guys, because it is an anthology. It's $8 per month. But you got four titles in there. So I bought Legends number one. I know you already did, Vernon, and it looks awesome. I just haven't had time to sit down and read it.
Yeah, it's a good
I may pick it up book. Number two today. I'm not sure. So, and
yeah, I might too.
That brings us to our number ones. What's your number one pick for this week?
My number one pick for this week is actually Red Hood and Arsenal. Like I said, anything dealing with the Teen Titans, I'm definitely going to be a fan of. At least try and get an interest in. Arsenal confronts his greatest mistake. The mercenaries known as the Iron Rule. Good thing Red Hood is there to help them. But will Jason Methods tear down the partnership he's already created by trying too hard to build? Plus, Joker's daughter faces the greatest challenge yet in high school. Oh, Joker's daughter's in here. I might have to pick this one up.
Cool.
I wonder how... I haven't kept up with Joker's daughter. From the one that they reintroduced to us, she found Joker's cut-off face and started wearing that as her mask and said she related to Joker. But that was like a year or two ago. I don't know if she's changed, if they've got a new one, because they said high school. We'll see. Like I said, I'm going to have to pick that one up. I have the Red Hood and the Outlaws. I haven't picked up any Red Hood in Arsenal yet, so.
Okay.
It'll be interesting.
So, well, my number one is every week seems like I'm trying to pull one of these that was a digital first that they're finally releasing into print. So this week, they had Bombshells, but I've already chose one of those. I actually chose Adventures of Supergirl number one. Now, this series is actually from the Supergirl TV show universe, and it's side stories with that. This one's issue number one. And it's in this issue, when an escaped prisoner from Fort Ross interrupts a football game, Supergirl is on the scene to take her down. But Rampage is mad about more important things than a sporting event, and no pesky superhero can stop her quest for revenge. This is art by Bengal and written by Sterling Gates. Now, Sterling Gates, if anybody has been writing Supergirl for years. So, and I guess it was a big deal to actually get him on this series. He's written this entire series so far that has been coming out to digital. But this is the first release of the actual print version. And it's actually a really good story. It's the beginning of a story arc with Rampage. They're doing these as actually story arcs, which is nice. So this is the beginning of the Rampage story arc. And then I think that's it for the comic shop for this week, right, Vernon?
Yep.
Now remember, the last week of May is the start of Rebirth, is the Rebirth special, which I know I'm going to get. I know you're probably going to get, Vernon. So we'll let you guys know about that when it's coming. But it's the countdown to Rebirth now, guys. We've got only a couple weeks left.
So I'm ready. I'm going to spend some good money on that. Then we also have our Hanna-Barbera ones we're going to get, too.
Oh, yeah. That's this month also. I think that starts next week.
Does it?
It's either next week or the week after. Give me half a minute. I'll let you know. I believe Scooby-Doo comes out next week. And actually, they have a name for those
now. No, Scooby-Doo comes out on the 25th.
Well, they have a name for that brand now. It's not just Hanna-Barbera. It's actually, they're calling the four new comics there and any other they add to that, Hanna-Barbera Beyond.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, and I don't see the listing right here in front of me. But we will let you guys, June, July, August. See, this is why you do all this stuff now. But we will keep you guys informed to let you know, and they're going to probably be on our picks list for those weeks anyway. So, do you have anything else for us, Vernon?
No, I don't. I'm just going to tell everybody you have a great free comic book day because this is what we're here for.
Oh yeah, and we're going to be meeting up here in a couple minutes to go to the shop for ourselves. And actually, since we don't have to run out of here, but we were given a lot of time by the league, so we're running up against a lot of time for the league. But let me bring this in.
Now, one out of everybody in the Justice League to appreciate this will be Batman.
Yes. And actually, I do want to take this time at the very end of the show. This is our tribute. Last week, we actually, the music world...
had a great loss.
Had a huge loss that actually affects the comic world a little bit. In the fact that we lost Prince, who did the soundtrack to the original 1989 Batman movie. So, our closing music today is a tribute to Prince with... a track right off the Batman soundtrack. But Vernon, why don't you let everybody know how they can get a hold of us on if they wanted to leave anything for us on social media and such.
If you guys want to hit us up on social media, we are DC Superpowers Podcast, and that is in the title for everything. On our Instagram, DC Superpowers Podcast. On Twitter, Superpowers DC.
Yeah.
And on Facebook is DC Superpowers Podcast. And if you ever want to reach us individually, I am Howlin' Out Wolf on Instagram, Vern McWayne Moore on Facebook, and VLO on Twitter.
And the easiest ways to get a hold of me is go to Facebook, look up Ken Rose, or on Twitter, you can get me at GW1Ken. Then also, if you want to send us an email here to the show, it's at DCSuperpowersPodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on the networks of the Tangibound Network at TangiboundNetwork.com. Or the Weeby Geeks Network is the actual home of the DC Superpowers Podcast at WeebyGeeksPC.com or WeebyGeeks.net. So other than that, you can also head on over to iTunes and Stitcher. Leave us a review and a rating. I mean, we can we want to know what you guys think of the show. The easiest way to do that is go to iTunes. You don't have to you don't have to have an iTunes account to leave us a review. Let us know what you thought of the show.
And I also want to thank everybody that's been hitting me up on our Instagram account. I'm getting some new followers, some new fans out there. So thank you very much for your support. As many as we can get, we love it, and we thank you.
Yes. And also, if you want to send us an email, you can get it. Well, I gave you the email. I think we've given them all the information, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have.
Okay. Well, as part of our new duties for the as Junior Justice League members, we got to actually go sweep some floors, I think.
Until we can get. As they say, it'll get our strength up right in the elbows.
That's right. We're paying our dues, as they say.
And once again, rest in peace to Prince. You were great for DC. You paved the way for a lot of music for the soundtracks of what we get in the DC comics now.
Exactly. So we're going to let you guys ride out on this, and we will see you next week.
Bye bye. Hot and close. Dig it now.
We're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.